Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am joined today by Luann Lenner. She is a breeder of Newfoundlands, and I'm really excited to kind of dig into some of the individual breeds. We don't always get to do this, but this is going to be a lot of fun. So welcome, Luann.
Thank you, and thank you for asking me to give some of my input.
Yeah, I think it's great. You've been at this for a while, so give us the 411. Let's talk about your background. I mean, you started, what, 70s?
Yes, I've been doing this now for 40 years. We became interested in the breed when my daughter at the time was 4 years old, and my mother-in-law was born and raised in Newfoundland.
Oh, there you go.
And she used to tell us about these big dogs that were always on the ship. And as I said, when my daughter was about 4 years old, I saw my first Newfoundland and immediately fell in love and got her. And then about 2 years later, I bought another bitch. And I was driving along, and I happened to see a little fun match along the side of the road, and I stopped, and someone approached me and asked me if I would be interested in joining my local kennel club, and I jumped on it, and the rest is kind of history. And then I just started learning all I could about the breed. I joined the Newfoundland Club of America in 1979. And that has been a big help, because back when I first became interested in the breed, of course, there was no internet, so
right.
I had to rely on other Newfoundland people for information and kind of went from there.
And who were some of your mentors? And we talk about this a lot on this show. We want to talk about who mentored you and then how you've been able to help mentor other people, too.
Well, back when I first became interested in the breed and joined the club, there were no such thing as mentors. But I have been very fortunate to have some wonderful, wonderful friends in the breed that I always say we would be friends regardless if we had Newfies or not. And one of the people that stick out the most is Brenda Santiago.
Okay.
Brenda and I hit it off immediately, and Brenda has helped me greatly along the way.
Amazing. That's very cool. And as you have spent 40 years, are there people that you can think of that have taken your lines and moved forward with them that you would think of as people you had mentored along the way?
Well, explain that a little bit.
So,
what you mean by that.
Right. So you think of people that have come into your circle. I know most of my best friends in the world are people who bought my dogs, right? And so you think of those people and you think of the ones that you've helped carry forward, and you hope that you have some impact, right, on the breed?
Correct. And one of those people, really, and she had been in the breed for numerous years. Her and her mother worked together in the breed, and it's Anchor Bay, Newfoundland.
Okay. Excellent.
And they bought a male for me a couple years ago, almost 7 years ago now, and he became quite a big winner in the breed, attained his ROM at a fairly early age, and I think the dog has helped their kennel and mm-hmm. my name also. And right. She was an owner handler.
Awesome. Very, very cool. And so you've had some nice success, national specialty winners, all that kind of stuff. Basically, what is your theory on breeding in terms of, are you line breeding? Are you outcrossing? Are you phenotype, genotype? How are you thinking about your breeding program to make the level of quality that you've been able to do?
Well, let me back up a little bit. And years ago, when I first started in the breed, and I would go to dog shows, the big winner and every dog that I liked you would see in the ring, it was from Pouch Cove, Newfoundland. And they are from New Jersey, and they are the top breeders, I believe, in the United States. And so my eye was always drawn to that type and style of dog. And when I really started breeding, I started to incorporate their lines into my breeding program and ended up with beautiful type, beautiful dogs, very sound dog. I'm a fanatic on health. which is can be a very real detriment to this breed. It is a unhealthy breed of dog with a lot of health problems. But I like to line breed, and I think if you don't line breed, you do lose a lot of your type.
Right, absolutely. So, Newfies in the working group, what makes them stand out? What makes them unique? And we talk a lot about preservation breeders, right? And that the Newfoundland is the physical embodiment of a culture and a history. You talked about the dogs on the ships that doesn't really exist anymore. So can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I think to me, and I'm sure people in every other breed will say the same thing, I think there's nothing more beautiful than a well-bred, beautiful typey Newfoundland that can move. But when you see a dog like that in the working group, it just kind of takes your breath away. And I have tried to preserve that, but everybody has lows in the breed where you kind of lose some of your type and then you go back, you reassess your breeding program, what am I lacking, what do I need to improve on, and you kind of go from there. The working group, to me, is always well represented with a good quality Newfoundland in it.
Yeah, yeah. So you feel like the Newfoundland right now is in pretty good shape, the breed as a whole?
Well, no, not really. I think we have lost a lot of type lately. But again, I see this every few years. The dogs get very good, and then all of a sudden they take a downhill slide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then we work like crazy to get the breed back up. I'm seeing a lot of smaller dog type right now, to me, is all over the place. There's no consistency in the breed right now.
Okay.
But I hope that improves.
Well, and I think you made a great point just a minute ago, talking about we recognize, so breeders, long-term breeders, look out there and say, oops, we have a problem, let's dial this back. I think that's so important. And I'm curious for you to share with our listeners, what's that trigger for you, right? What's that thing that you look out into a group of Newfoundlands at the National and say, okay, we got some issues that we need to fix? What sets that for you?
I see a Newfoundlands that are lacking in head type. We're seeing a smaller Newfoundland, dogs that don't have the bone and the substance that they should.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think we need to all get on the same board with. And I realize, even when you're reading a standard, everyone is going to interpret it differently. I think it's very important to belong to clubs, especially your national breed club, where they do put on seminars, and you can go to judges' seminars. I've been an NCA breed member for a couple years, and I love to always try to explain when I go to my national and I'm mentoring new judges on what to look for, what not to look for.
Excellent.
What to reward and what not to reward.
Right. And for your breed, curiosity question, how much of that, when you're mentoring, plays back to the dog's original function? We're going to talk to Sue Rainey also in this interview series about the water work with your breed. And so how do you apply that back to the work that they were designed to do?
Well, myself not being a working person, I don't do the working aspect, but I think it's fantastic that people do retain that working ability in the breed. Even though I don't do the working things with my dogs, mm-hmm. I see it just many times on an everyday the things that my dogs do that I'm sure other breeds don't do, if right. That makes any sense.
Right. No, that's exactly. So the breed is designed with a large bone and a heavy head because it serves this function, and that would be water rescue or specifically applying the standard to their original function.
Absolutely. And, well, I don't know how much a big head is going to help in the water, but
you've got to have a big mouth to grab hold of somebody to pull them in.
Well, that's a good point, but I do think proper coat is always very important. And again, you have to have a sound dog.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a dog that has health problems or is not a very sound representation of the breed, you may see some problems, not so much the water work, but just obedience in general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so within the Newfoundland breed, you spoke earlier that the breed has some pretty serious struggles in the health department, and this is something that you have really focused on in your breeding program. So talk to us about that. Talk to us about how do you keep your type and not throw the baby out with the bathwater and all of that.
Well, it's not always easy. And I went through a period about 10 years ago where I was losing my soundness. And I don't know why. Everything was still the same. You know, you try to bring in different dogs that are going to help your breeding program. And I'm happy to report I'm back on track now. But it is very amazing to me how all of a sudden you can just lose something something that's very important, it just disappears.
Right. So give us a...
So it can be very hard to maintain, but as far as the health aspects, obviously it's a large breed, giant breed. Mm-hmm. So orthopedics are a big problem in our breed, and the heart issues also. Okay. As everybody says, dogs don't drop over from an orthopedic problem, but they do with the heart problem that's very bad in our breed. So it's very important that all puppies and all breeding stock should be cleared by a cardiologist, a board-certified cardiologist, not right. just a local vet.
And you do an echocardiogram, I'd assume, for your breed?
I don't routinely do them on my breeding stock, and a lot of, it's another, I don't know, not sure the word I want to use, some breeders...
Auscultation, I know, is
right,
our breed offers the literally. Option.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's very expensive.
Yeah.
But I do think that, I mean, obviously, if a murmur is heard on an adult dog, then of course we go to the cardiologist and we do a full cardiac workup. But usually a cardiologist will even say, well, I don't hear anything, so there's no need to do a Doppler.
Right.
So you get conflicting reports in that regard also. And I've dealt with many cardiologists through the years, and they all have their own theories and their own way of doing things.
True. Absolutely. And so do you... Say, for example, we'll pick a for example. You've got a beautiful, beautiful bitch, and the hips are maybe questionable. Maybe it's a fair or something. Do you take her to a dog who maybe isn't exactly the same look or the same style you want that has OFA excellent hips, for example?
No, okay. No. And that kind of makes me chuckle, that question, because, mm-hmm. and I've seen this time and time again, a fair is still a passing. Mm-hmm. And I think too much emphasis is placed on ratings. I put more emphasis on what the dog is producing.
Okay.
If I could have you can have a dog that's OFA excellent, but it continually produces problems. There again, you've got to look at litter mates and go back as far as you can in the pedigree to figure out, okay, what's happening. And something else, I don't keep males at my house. I never have. I only keep bitches.
Okay.
So that makes me go out and find the best male that's going to complement my girls and my pedigrees.
Right. So when you're making those selections, okay, you're at the national, you're doing the next stud dog hunt. We've all done it. What are your...
Always.
Always, constantly. What are your top three? What's the first three things you want to see from the dog that's going to be conceivably incorporated into your breeding program?
He's got to be balanced, he's got to be sound, and hopefully he's going to have a pedigree that's going to complement my girls.
Right. So you have, over 40 years, developed an understanding of which lines, Nick, one of my favorite words, which lines work well with your bitches.
Pouch Cove, because mm-hmm. that's basically the lines and the pedigree that I'm breeding.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So Newfoundlands are big, hairy, slobbery dogs.
They sure are.
I've shown plenty. I love them. They're adorable. What makes a great Newfoundland home? And which owners do you say, yeah, probably not?
Well, this is a very interesting question, and I've unfortunately had many people upset with me because I have refused to sell them puppies.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the best home is someone who has really done the research on the breed. They are going to be totally committed to grooming, and that's something that I cannot stress enough, is the grooming aspect. And I realize it can be overwhelming at times. So the grooming, being familiar with the breed, and I want somebody who's going to be home. And I realize in this day and age, a lot of families, the husband, the wife, they're both working all day, and I will not sell to homes like that. I think it's very unfair to a puppy to be kept in a crate or be locked up in a house all day, and I try to explain people that this is a very social breed of dog, and a puppy that's left alone all day, you're going to have socialization issues, you're going to have housebreaking issues, and the puppy's just going to be bored and get into trouble.
Yeah, I think that's a common occurrence, unfortunately. So I used to always laugh. My parents raised Clumber Spaniels, and the people would come to look at the puppies, and there'd be lots of pretty outfits, and Clumber puppies are shedding all over them and drooling on them, and we're like,
I try to always warn people that want to come and look at puppies, just wear old clothes. I mean, I don't know of a newfie person that doesn't live in sweat.
Yes.
And just You know, and I tell them, I warn them ahead of time, you're going to get slimed on, you're going to get haired, hairy all over. And I love people that come in and they get on the floor and they're rolling around on the floor with the dogs. I mean, I love homes like that.
Yeah.
And I have to say, even after all these years with Newfoundland, even I get a little icked out by the slobber sometimes.
Okay, true story, absolute true story. Showing a special running around the ring at a specialty in Portland. Dog shakes his head. 6-8-inch goober goes in my eyeball and running down my face as I'm running around the ring. Classic.
That happened to my mother one time.
Classic.
Yeah, she's sitting holding a puppy, and the mother comes up and just shakes her head, and one goes right across my mother's face down her glasses. And, of course, my mother was horrified, and all I could do was laugh. So
I was somewhere between gagging
and
laughing.
Oh, exactly. And I can look at my ceiling here and see slobber hanging on my ceilings with mixed in with a little dog hair just to add to it a little bit.
It makes that cement texture.
Sure.
My parents,
it's excellent glue, really.
Yes, yes. My parents, when they sold the house I grew up in, had to scrape the ceiling. Dead serious.
Oh, we can relate to that.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so...
But there's so many other good that makes up for those few negatives, you know?
Right. The sweet and the snuggly.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. So, and I ask every guest this question, what tips, what suggestions, what ideas do you have for our long-term members to help mentor the next generation?
That's a good question. And as we touched on this a little earlier, I think too many of new people don't want to really learn about the breed. They want the instant gratification. And I think us old-timers really need to delve into learning about the pedigrees, learning about what's behind your dogs in your pedigrees that you're breeding. And it's also helpful if people are always going to be honest and upfront. I mean, there's always the good and there's always the bad. But if we're not going to be upfront and honest, new people aren't going to learn a lot of things.
Excellent. Sharing that information, sharing what you know.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, Luann, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your thoughts and ideas on these adorable little scalawags. I love me some Newfoundlands, except the spit.
Well, you're very welcome, and I thank you for asking me to do this podcast, and we'll go from there.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Luann.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
So, huge thanks to Luann Linner, Newfoundland breeder, for sharing her thoughts with us about the conformation aspects and breeding and health issues with our breed. And we're going to hear next from Sue Rainey, who's a Newfoundland fancier who's spent 25 years doing water rescue work with the breed. And I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from Sue about all of the amazing work that these dogs can do in the water. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm being joined now by Sue Rainey. She's a Newfoundland breeder and individual involved with water work for the breed. And we talked a little bit earlier about breeding Newfoundlands, about all of the work that's involved with the conformation aspect. But Sue has some great information for us specifically as involved the working aspect of the breed. So with Luann's input on conformation and Sue's input on the working aspect, we really hope people will be able to get a richer understanding of Newfoundlands. So thank you very much for joining us, Sue.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I would love to hear from you on your background. What gets you started with Newfoundlands and specifically with water work?
Well, we got started with Newfoundlands when our children were small and we wanted to add a family companion that would be not your average dog. So we set out for looking for a dog that was happy-go-lucky, loved to do outside activities. We liked to camp and canoe and all kinds of different things. And we're looking for a dog that would match that kind of active outdoor lifestyle. And with two little boys, we needed a kind of a big, sturdy dog to keep up with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we settled on the Newfoundland. And from early beginnings, we found out that the love the dogs have of the water and the outdoors really sparked an interest in us that we didn't even know we had until we started.
It's, I'm laughing because it's such a perfect story. I mean, it's so real.
Yeah, well, they're wonderful dogs. They make great pets. They make great family members. And they have this really amazing ability to be a companion in the water in a totally different way than any other dog. And it's just joyful to be around.
And that's amazing. So you had, one would assume you had mentors who helped you learn about the water work with Newfoundlands.
Yes. And I would strongly encourage anybody listening to reach out to their regional Newfoundland club. We actually got involved with a local club here when we got our first Newfoundland. Our breeder that mentored us in the beginning said, oh, you have to join this club. We're like, oh no, we don't need a new thing to do. But we quickly found that the regional clubs have a wealth of information for dog owners about how to groom your Newfoundland, how to learn how to adapt your big dog to your little home, and how to train it to do all these wonderful, exciting things. So I would say that definitely our regional club was our first mentors. There are some wonderful books about water training, one that has been written and rewritten by Judy Adler, who is a well-respected breeder and Newfoundland fancier for a very long time. She wrote an amazing water training book that helped guide our first steps toward learning how to participate in the sport of working events with our dog, and has been an incredible resource for us for a very long time.
Excellent.
And from that, just meeting other Newfoundland fanciers and being able to share notes and compare how our dog learns versus how others learn, and that networking of people who love to do this kind of quirky sport of water training that and Newfoundlands love. So it's been really a interesting journey, and 25 years later, we're still loving it.
That is awesome. So you mentioned earlier that Newfoundlands really have something very special, very unique when they're working in the water. So I'm hoping that you can provide us some background about the history of the breed and how they were developed and the culture that brought us the Newfoundland that we have today.
We have a wonderful, rich history of dogs working in partnership with their humans in the Newfoundland breed. They were originally from, of course, Newfoundland, Canada, and they were able to breed a big dog who was steady on a fishing boat and would be able to keep the fishermen safe, as well as when they came into port, haul the fish to market in a little dog cart. So they have a rich tradition of being a working companion to their humans and doing it in a wonderful way. Newfoundland dogs are credited with some really amazing rescues that can help our current reenactments of water rescue work along the way. There have been stories of Newfoundlands who rescued owners off sinking vessels.
Right.
One Newfoundland in particular rescued a whole shipload of people when it was able to take a boat line from the sinking ship to shore. And then the people were able to use that line to hand over hand work their way off the boat and into safety. So they have been bred from the beginning to be a really strong swimmer in the water. Their unique webbed feet give them a little bit more power through the water, and their structure is such that they are able to really, instead of dog paddle, they actually have a wonderful swimming stroke in the water that is effortless for them, but provides a lot of forward thrust and wonderful swimming ability. They love to jump. And jumping into the water is one of the things that Newfoundlands from a boat do in glorious fashion that gives them another unique way of being able to be adapted to water rescue work.
Right. And so you kind of started the perfect segue to what we were going to talk about next. And that is the form and function. We talk about this a lot in dog shows, right? The dog is built a certain way in order to do a certain job. So I'm also hoping that you can give us some ideas about what we see in the dog show ring with the Newfoundland and how that translates to that beautiful, powerful swimming stroke that you were just talking about.
Well, one of the things I think that you can see in Newfoundlands in the show ring that translates really well is the effortless fluid motion. If you see a Newfoundland running around the show ring, they should have a lovely fluid gait, and that effortless movement and that ability to power through even a circle around the ring is a good way of demonstrating that they will be able to have a powerful stroke in the water.
Okay.
Judges, when they go over Newfoundlands in the show ring, are looking for nice, well-developed muscles and shoulders and the rear, because that's where the power comes from for our dogs in swimming. So they're not just a pretty face. They really do have a lot behind that wonderful coat that they have that also protects them in the water, that gives them the ability to do what they're bred to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And so talk about the water tests. I mean, certainly I come from sporting dogs, so I've seen lots of dogs swim and go get birds, but that's different than swim and go get a person.
Oh, if you have the opportunity to go to a local water test and see Newfoundlands in action, it will take your breath away. It is one of the most fun and amazing things that we do, I think, as a breed, to really emphasize that heritage. The water rescue exercises are divided up into like a beginner level, intermediate level, and an excellent level. And we call them water dog, water rescue dog, and water rescue dog excellent. The beginning level demonstrates a dog who has control with his owner on the beach and then can perform a series of exercises that demonstrate saving people in the water, saving things that people may have dropped off a boat, and then being able to have an enjoyable swim with their own handler as a way of demonstrating, again, control in the water. One of the things that's important for a dog and its human in real life as a rescue partnership is to be able to swim well together and take direction in the water. And that junior level kind of demonstrates that. The dogs have five different exercises where they rescue a retrieving bumper. They rescue either a jacket or a life cushion that fell off a boat, basically. They rescue a person out of the water. They rescue, actually, it goes back to that thought of the Newfoundland who brought the line to shore. We have a series of exercises that demonstrate that have a kind of throwback to that, salute to that Newfoundland as well. They're all the kind of same thing. I took the line out to the person, or I brought the line back to shore. And the dog does all of that. And then in the intermediate level, which we call water rescue dog, it's a little bit harder and a little bit more advanced. The dog has to jump off the boat and rescue a paddle that, like, if you were rowing along and oop, you lost your paddle, the dog goes and fetches it. The dog has to pull in a boat from that is floundering out in the water and bring those people back to shore safely, and do rescue a person in the water and also ignore the two people that aren't drowning in the water and just go fetch the one that is.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and then our excellent level is an amazing display of a combination of instinct as well as really advanced training. It has several different exercises also that the dog has to be out in deeper water. It's about 75 feet out from the beach.
Oh my goodness.
And then it has to rescue three people who are all simultaneously drowning, like they all fell out of the boat.
Right.
And all three people have to get rescued. It has to rescue a boat that's just simulating it's just being abandoned on the water and floating out in the middle of the lake, and the dog has to go get it. It has to rescue people who are hiding behind the boat and simulating like, oh, the boat flipped over and here are people who need help, but the dog can't see them from shore.
Uh-huh.
And one of the other exercises in that group is a person is floating by on a raft, and the raft capsizes and flips over, and the person is underneath, and the dog has to dive underneath the raft to rescue the person who is simulating that they're drowning under the raft.
Oh my gosh.
And then back to the Newfoundland who saved all those people from the boat, we have an exercise where the Newfoundland brings the line all the way to shore from a boat out in the middle of the lake. So when you see all those exercises happen and all the dogs participating, it is amazing tribute to the power and the strength and the teamwork involved with dogs and their owners. And it is the tradition in our breed that has happened for hundreds of years. Dogs were rescuing people before we even created this little simulated competition. And it's one way that we can keep that heritage alive now that people are a lot safer and they don't necessarily need Newfoundlands on the shore of a river keeping the people from falling in. But
well, I don't know.
But we keep that tradition alive anyway.
Okay, so this is amazing. So number one, the person, the handler, is not in the water with the dog, correct? The handler is guiding the dog from the bank. Okay.
Correct.
So that is pretty incredible. Having spent a lot of time with retrievers, I can say that's like a directed retrieve, but with a person.
Right.
Wow. Okay. So you're talking about the dog swimming multiple times in a day for these tests, and you're talking about many hundreds of yards at the advanced level from what you're telling me.
Right.
So these dogs have to be very, very fit.
They do. They have to be in good condition. And I think every Newfoundland enthusiast who works their dog in the water would say that for the amount of time they spend in competition, it may be 10 minutes on the beach and in the water, there's probably hundreds of hours of swimming preparation that took place before that time. Just to make sure your Newfoundland can have the stamina to do that.
Takes
a little bit of work, but it's just so much fun to see the light bulb go on in their little doggy faces and go, I know this, to watch them be able to work independently of you and to see that enthusiasm for the water, which carries through still to this day from hundreds of years ago. It's really a sight that takes your breath away.
That is amazing. And so this is, I understand, Newfoundland Club of America, correct? AKC does not award this title. This is a Newfie Club. Okay. And so, I mean, you're actively involved with this. If you had to gauge a percentage, so do 50% of the Newfoundlands that are being shown do this or what? How often, how frequent, how popular is this sport?
Well, I would say that out of the Newfoundlands that participate in the show aspect of Newfoundlands at any given year, I would bet probably half to two-thirds are actively also working on the working aspect of things as well. One of the wonderful things about our club is that it recognizes excellence in breed conformation as well as excellence in their working heritage as well. So there are special awards if you're a champion in the show ring, as well as if you are able to participate and be successful in the working events too. So that makes it important for all Newfoundland owners to be able to do kinds of both things, which I think makes our breed stronger.
I think that's awesome. And so tell me, if you had to pick out, say, two or three things from your breed standard to apply the form to function, what would you talked earlier about the movement. What else would you think, I want to see a X, Y, and Z that will help make a great water rescue dog just from the structural perspective?
Oh, well, let's see. You want to see movement. You want to see solid front and back. And the overall structure of the dog has to be really sound. Well, I don't know, not so much in terms of how it looks necessarily, but how it performs. You know, the health in our breed is so important. And if you have a wonderfully strong, healthy Newfoundland, you have a better chance at having a very sound, healthy rescue dog as well. And I think that tends to make all the difference.
Sure. Absolutely. And so besides join your regional club, come out and watch, what are some of your recommendations to people who might be interested in maybe trying this out, seeing how this goes with their dog?
Oh, don't be afraid to take your dog to the lake and throw a stick or throw his favorite toy. Let that natural ability come out and play and everyday life. One of the most important things competition-wise is a dog being able to hold different things. And that's something Newfoundland owners can do in their kitchen. Take hold and give practice is a cornerstone of all of the work that dogs do in the water. And just being able to just enjoy the companionship that your dog has and taking them on a wealth of experiences that introduce him to a broader world and make them more confident is going to help with anything that they do, and especially with water work. They love people, they love to be around people, and they love the water. So putting those things in combination, we started on camping trips. Like, oh, let's fetch this stick. Woohoo, we love fetching the stick. Now let's like see what else we can fetch. And it just kind of blossomed from there.
Right.
Just getting your dog out and about. And I know in our community, at the end of the summer, there usually is at our community pools, like a doggy day where you could go swim at the community pool. Go do that. Go out and find places where your dog and you and the water connect. And that's the greatest way to start out on this journey that I can think of.
I love that. I love your enthusiasm. But I have to ask you, because it's just in my mind. So do you have any funny stories of when the Newfoundland fetched something it wasn't supposed to, like the guy's kayak that you didn't know or something?
Oh my gosh, that could take all day.
See, I just knew it.
You know, that's what the part of training for our competitions is so much fun and so unpredictable. We have had Newfoundland dogs go, we might stage the drowning person out in the middle of the lake, and they're going to go save the little two-year-old, I'm sure, because first it's closer, and second of all, it looks like it needed more help than
right.
The person out there on the lake. And anything in between. I mean, we've had dogs rescue. We use a little 14-foot rowboat for practice with rowing oars, 6-foot-high oars. Well, one time one of those oars actually did fall off the boat, and the dog that was working at that time went and rescued the great big 6-foot oar instead of the little 2-foot practice one, because we really needed that one. So we had to go get it. And it's just, there's so many different times where silly things happen at the lake, and it makes all of it worthwhile, because when it comes right down to it, it's still just spending the day with your best dog companion, and those kinds of memories last a lifetime, much more so than, oh, we earned a title that day. I'm going to remember Benny fetching the 6-foot oar from the boat my whole entire life, and that is probably one of the best memories of water work that I have.
That's so amazing. Okay, so in closing, I've seen sort of random pictures and social media things. Are there Newfoundlands working for real in water rescue today?
Yes, there are. Not very many here in the United States. In Italy, they are used as helpful rescue companions in the Italian beach area, more so because the water is so treacherous there. And they will drop them from a helicopter.
Yes, that was the picture I saw. It was the dog in the helicopter.
Yes, it is so amazing. It is truly amazing. And those dogs can power through the water and do what most people would fear that it might be too unsafe for. But those dogs can do it in a minute. And there are a few other places where Newfoundlands are doing water rescue. Here in the States, there's too many regulations against dogs and beaches and those kinds of things, so it doesn't usually surface too much here. We do have some really amazing search and rescue Newfoundlands, though, that do some pretty awesome search and rescue work in the water as well.
Excellent.
It is a skill that can be adapted to actual
right.
circumstances, and every year, we hear of stories where a Newfoundland who was just out camping with his family may have seen someone struggling in the water and go and rescue that person out of the water and make sure that the person is safe. So when you least expect it, it could be something that could really be put to good use here in the States as well.
Amazing. Okay, well, Sue, thank you so very much for your time. I really appreciate it. This has been a great talk. I really love hearing about all the breeds and what they do for their jobs. So thank you very, very much.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Alrighty, listeners, we're here with Allison Foley from Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Allison's been kind enough to offer us some great tips for doing the best grooming and handling with your dog. So, Allison, today we are talking about right tools for the job, yeah?
Yes, we are, Laura.
Excellent. Excellent. So, brushes. There's so many. It's so confusing.
It is confusing. When it comes to brushes, as you said, there are so many. And, you know, I find even in the past 5 years, they've really exploded in the types of brushes that we have. So if we talk about just a pin brush, like our straight pinned pin brush, Now we have a short pin, a medium pin, a medium long pin, a long pin, and an extra long pin. And people come to me all the time and they're so confused as to what one to use. So what I like to say is think about what you're doing with your pin brush. So I tend to go the longer the hair, the longer the pin I'm going to use on my brush. A long drop coated breed, you get the really nice smooth finish to your dog if you have a longer pin. If you're brushing a Shetland sheepdog or a Pomeranian, something with a shorter hair, I find you can get to the root and get to the end of the hair with a shorter pinned brush. A couple tips I like to talk about when it comes to pin brushes is this, especially with your poodles, your drop coated breeds, things that you are really trying to preserve that hair because the hair doesn't shed, doesn't fall out. I really want you to take good care of your brushes. A lot of them these days come in just those plastic boxes. I even just use those, but you want to preserve the pins on those brushes. As soon as the pins are bent, broken, or pushed in, they are ripping out hair. So if you spent $100 on that pin brush, take care of it, because as soon as it's bent or broken, then it is ripping out hair and it's not doing the job that you want. So I like you to keep it in a box or buy a plastic box to keep it in, but a lot of them do come in those just clear plastic boxes. So keep your old ones with the bent pins. You can use them if you have to trim somewhere where it's on AstroTurf or, God forbid, in a hotel room and we want to keep those hotel rooms clean. You can use your bent or broken brushes to clean up the hair off the carpet. They work great. Give them to your kids, do whatever, but please don't use them on your show dog.
So, and that means don't throw them in the top of your tack box and close the lid.
That's exactly what that means, Laura. See, I can tell you were an offender.
You have to dear God.
Yes, you have to keep care of them. I cringe when I see people open their tack box and there's a pin brush stuck to, you know, a chain.
Stuck to the collar.
It
makes me insane.
And I'm just like, nah. The other thing I like to tell people is, so even for the same dog or the same, you know, even if you just have one breed, keep separate brushes for the brushes that you're using on product as opposed to the brushes you're using on clean hair. So for instance, with poodle, I'll have ones marked spray. So those are the ones I use for spraying up. And then the ones marked poodle are for when I'm either trying to get the spray out or on clean hair that hasn't been sprayed yet. You don't want to be keep putting that residue back into the hair. So remember what job you're doing. Same, if you might be using it on your Spinoni. If there's a little chalk in there, you might want to keep one brush for when you're using chalk and one brush for your wand. And that's separate from your actual chalk brush that you might be using to apply the chalk. That's just for brushing that hair. And I find that your brushes are going to last a lot longer. The product's going to come apply better. When you go to brush that clean hair, the hair is going to seem cleaner if you're using a clean brush.
I love it. Okay, right tools for the job. Perfect. Thank you, Allison. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you, Laura.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.